it is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Blog Talk Radio. It's time for the Roots and Roots Show with your host, Greg Rashid, bringing you history and music from the Black American diaspora. Greg and his guests' goal is to root the show's information in your psyche, providing you the roots to expand knowledge within your community. Now here's your host, Greg Rashid.
Well, I want to say good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you're listening to the program. This is Greg Rashid with another edition of the Root and Root Show, where we talk about issues from a Black perspective, and also that you always learn something, be it learning something about African-American history, maybe it's something you learn about African-American music, but the fact is you learn. I always want people coming away from this show, wherever you are in this world, learning something. And a lot of folks listen live, but also a lot of people listen at their convenience. I like that, but they make comments and all, and I'm happy of that. And we have folks all over the world listening, from obviously in the United States, and also I picked up some new people in Belgium. Got folks in South Korea, Thailand, Singapore, Australia, Russia, Britain, and like I said, the U.S., but a lot of people listen every Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. Mountain Time in Colorado on KUHSDenver.com, created by the one and only, the amazing man of media, Henry Archuleta. And I just want to say hi all to my friends and all my, you know, just my buddies out there in the Colorado region, hoping I could get back out there, but because of this lockdown and all this COVID stuff, can't do it. But maybe next time I'll be able to get out there. But I'm just happy to have my guest on here and, you know, just to talk about the subject. And I have to say, before I introduce my guest, I was talking to a buddy of mine who's been on the show, Dr. James Brunson, and we were just talking about the fact that they're not too, you know, I really, as folks who listen to this program, they know that I concentrate a lot on the Negro Leagues and baseball, and also just Black history in general, and many times I have, you know, end up having folks who are excellent scholars, but they're white, especially talking about the Negro League. And I was just talking to James about that because other folks have commented about that to me, and he said, well, have you talked to Dr. Brunson? And I said, was that, you know, I thought he was saying Brunson, and I said, is that a relative? I said, no, Dr. Sabrina A. Brunson. Need to have her on to talk about the Philadelphia Dolly Varden. And I knew about the Dolly Vardens, but I didn't know there was a book dedicated to them. And I said, I got to get this. So the minute I hung up the phone talking to Jane, I just ordered the book, and I'm just glad I did. And it is a children's book, and this is funny. After 21 years of doing programs like this all over the country, this is the first time I've talked to someone about a children's book, but this is more than a children's book. This is a history book. And I'm just honored to have one today. Dr. Sabrina A. Brunson. Are you there, Dr. Brunson?
I am. Hello.
Hello there. And you just do, I was going to give you a whole bio, but you do so much. I'm just going to say that, you know, you are a African-American scholar, diversity consultant, also a voiceover person. You do a voiceover, actor, community activist. And you just, you know, and this book is the first in a series of books that are entitled Strength Beyond Measure. And I'm just fascinated by everything that you've been doing and that you put this book out. Because like I was just saying, this is, you know, it's a children's book, but it's, no, to me it's a history book that any age should read this. Because this whole, the Dolly Varden is just amazing. And I want you to, first of all, tell my listeners, and by the way, listeners, you can call in at 563-999-3479, 563-999-3479. 3479. And tell my listeners what inspired you, to write this book about the Philadelphia Dolly Vardens, especially, you know, a fact that's a subject that a lot of people don't know about. You really got to know your 19th century black history. You got to know about the Reconstruction era. You got to know about baseball and, you know, the dead ball era and women's history. And it's just fascinating. So what inspired you to write this particular book?
Well, actually, what you just talked about, I was actually doing research about the Negro Baseball League. And as you said, a lot of people really don't know a lot about it. And, of course, a lot of white scholars really talk about it and publish it. But it really is important to get individuals who have those authentic experiences where they can make those connections to do some of the research. And that's what I was doing. I was actually looking up and researching Negro Baseball League for the Jackie Robinson Day to make sure that we didn't just celebrate the fact that he integrated Major League Baseball, but I also wanted people to know some of the other amazing things that Jackie Robinson did. Most people aren't aware of those facts either. So just as an example, that first year that he integrated Major Baseball League, he actually wrote a weekly column talking about race relations and families and things like that. He was a part of a company that was designed to help African Americans be able to afford houses. He was also a part of a company of one of the first African American banks. So again, I was doing that research, and in that, with the Negro Baseball League, I of course was really surprised to find out that there were three women who played in Negro Baseball League. So that, of course, fascinated me when you had Tony Robinson and Connie Morgan and Mamie Peanut Johnson. And so Tony Stone. But once I found out that they played in the Negro Baseball League on the male teams, that led me to more discoveries about women's baseball. And it is so important for everybody to understand that the Philadelphia Dolly Vardens was the first professional women's baseball team, and all of the players were African American. So again, not the first African American women's professional baseball team, the first one overall. And so, of course, I was fascinated with that. And I'll also say that I was really honored that my book was published. It was released in September of 2020 because that was the centennial anniversary of Negro League Baseball. Hello? Hello?
Hello? I'm sorry, everyone. With the wire community, so, and I think.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. I think I got disconnected.
Yeah, it was my fault. The wiring in this neighborhood, it's been raining. The wires are acting strange, and I had to call the folks to come out and fix it.
Okay, so are we good now?
We're good to go. Listeners listening, but we're good to go.
Okay, so I'm not sure if you heard how I got interested or not. What do you want me to do?
Turn up until the point about you were talking about Jackie Robinson, talking about the three women, Tony Stone, Tony Morgan, and Peanut.
Mamie Peanut Johnson. Yes. So once I discovered that, that led me to say, okay, we had women who were actually playing with the male teams. So that's when I started my research and discovered the Philadelphia Dolly Vartons. And as I was saying, I really want people to understand that they weren't just the first professional women's African-American baseball team. They were the first women's professional baseball team ever. And all of the players just happened to be African-American. So that's another important point. Hello? Hello? Hello?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
And you're about to say about the women again. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's my side or just out and out blog talk tonight. Because there's some odd things going on.
Let's just try to push through. If we keep fading out, I'll just keep calling
back. That's all we can do.
Exactly.
Well, you know what? I got to say this. This is a subject that is not out there too much, and so there are forces that be that don't want certain subjects talked about.
Sure.
And some things happen online and anything, but anyway, we're going to persevere with this. So as you were saying.
Yeah, so as I was saying, so that is how I actually got involved with finding out about the Philadelphia Dolly Vartons. And you kind of touched upon it a little bit. A white owner of the franchise actually formed that team during Reconstruction. And he did so to make it as an exhibit, you know. And, of course, his goal was to exploit the players. And that's where the name Philadelphia Dolly Vartons came from, because that was a character in a Charles Dickens book, and she wore loud, garish costumes. So instead of providing the Philadelphia Dolly Vartons with uniforms, they actually had to wear red costumes, because, again, his goal was basically to, you know, have people come out as an exhibit, but to exploit them. But it's the most important thing to know is that the Philadelphia Dolly Vartons really were skilled athletes. And we'll get a little bit more into how they were able to utilize their skills later.
Yeah, because they definitely were athletes. And the funny thing, because I went online. I'm part of newspapers.com, and I always research on it all the time. And I cut out some articles about the Vartons, and you know, and you talk about it a little bit in the book, but I mean, it's you know, they were perceived at first as a joke, but I know in some of the articles, as you read further down, like the Detroit newspaper that's out of, Iowa and Indiana, they talk about the fact near the end of the article that the women can actually play in their shop.
Absolutely. Let me say that part, that you are right. In my book, it's a book of historical fiction, but I do have a lot of those facts in it, and that is what made me write it, because that happened so often. Again, even going back to the three women who played in the Negro League baseball, Toni Stone replaced Jackie Robinson, but again, it was kind of designed of, oh, let's do it as an exhibit. And so, as you were saying, the white franchise owner, he really just wanted to do just what I said, exploit them by having them wear these loud, garish red costumes, not baseball uniforms. That was his goal. But as you said, the women were skilled athletes, and in my book, you're going to see basically how they were able to figure out how to actually exert those skills as the athletes that they were, and to garner some of the respect that they deserve.
Yeah, because it's so fascinating, and I don't want to give anything away in this book, you know. But the fact is, you do an excellent job of how you weave in. It doesn't even feel like a children's book, for one, and it does feel like a history book, and it's not even 30 pages, but it's so much history in there that I don't know how you did it. You jam it in there, and you got, you know, we also got to give a shout out to your illustrator. You could say something about the illustrator, because these illustrations are excellent.
Mark A. Montgomery, yes. And I'll even say that, like you're saying, I understand, you know, we don't want to give away a lot, but for me, it really is important for people to understand the value of the book. And so on the
right.
cover, the cover has one of the Philadelphia Dolly Vartons, and I was able to work with him, and I made a point of saying, you know, make sure that with the expression, she is like running towards home, and her expression is, I am a skilled athlete, and get out of my way.
That's it.
That
That's
is the expression
thing.
She had on her face, an expression of resolve. And even the way, even the way that he created the costume that they had to wear, I thought was really, really, really satisfying, and it's a great visual for the book content.
Because it comes close to, as I you to read the descriptions in the newspaper articles from 1883,
mm-hmm.
it comes close to that.
Yes. Yeah, we did. We both did our research.
Yeah, you did a great job, because I'm reading the articles and I'm looking at the book. I said, yeah, the same thing.
Yes.
Did a perfect job on this. And that's, you know, and that's very important, that, you know, just for someone to know that this, you know, this group of incredible women are out there during the end of Reconstruction. Because you got to
yes.
understand, you know, even now in the 21st century, there's, as you know, Dr. Brinson, there's still folks out there who make fun of women's sports. I
sure,
covered sports
of course.
For many years in Denver, and I had colleagues of mine, I could say some names, I won't, who would always laugh at me and say, why are you covering women's basketball? Why are you doing that? Why do you want to cover that? And they thought it was insulting for a man to cover that. And so and that still it still goes on. So imagine in 1883, a group mm-hmm. of women coming out, a team, you know, getting ready to play baseball, the new sport of the time. It had been around only, well, 20, 30-something years. So you can imagine in the comments that are in some of the articles about them at that time, they're, you know,
absolutely.
I mean, they are very racist, but at the same time at the end, they acknowledge that these are great athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they give the names of the women, that's what impressed me. They belittle them, but at the end they give the names, and that's respect.
Yes. Yes. And again, now over time, we are going to make sure that they really do get their proper respect and their proper place in history.
Yeah, this book is a more than a start to that. And listeners, again, you can call in here at 563-999-3479. I'm talking with Dr. Sabrina A. Brinson, author of the new book, Beat the Philadelphia Dolly Vartons. So tell, you know, what as you were writing this, what was like the, just it got you really excited, like, wow, you know, I know it's a whole lot of wows when you read about the Vartons, but what in particular, like, said, oh, man.
The fact that they were African-American women, and they were the first women's professional baseball team. That is
yeah.
what really excited me. And it excited me that even in those turbulent times of the Reconstruction, that they basically had the resilience and ingenuity to do so. And that is
That's
basically a theme that comes through with the book, because we wanted people to know that, again, of course, they were intelligent women. They knew what the franchise owner was doing, but it was a way for them to do just as I said, I've got these skills, and he may intend to use it one way, but you know, they utilize their ingenuity, which is greater than bigotry, and they
That's
utilize
right.
their resilience to stick in there to really, really, really be able to make a difference. And can you imagine how excited little girls were when they heard about these women athletes? And along with the little girls, can you imagine how impressed the little boys had to be? Because you just
oh,
talked
yeah.
about now how people are, oh, women athletes, yeah, whatever. No, so it was impressive to everybody. They really were inspiring role models. And if you think about it, so sure, inspiring role models for other aspiring athletes. But also, when I heard about it, I envisioned myself back then. I'm like, wow, you know what? I thought now they have the ingenuity and the resilience to do something like that that they really want to do, I feel like I would have been inspired to do exactly what I wanted to do also.
Yeah, I mean, it really, just to see them do that, and that day, you know, keep in mind, in 19th century baseball, that's the dead ball era, and it was rough.
Yes.
It was not easy, you know, it was not sports.
Not, that's,
you know,
what I
now.
Mean. That's the resilience.
Yeah. You know, and I know in a couple of articles I read, I can't remember if it's in your book, but the thing is they talk about one of the women gets hit by a ball.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't, you know, being sexist, the article was like trying to say that she didn't cry or anything, but she stood there. Most men would not stand there and take that.
That's
and
resilient.
It's just showing, you know, in a roundabout way that, you know, these were serious athletes.
Yes.
And an injury, you know,
that,
just an injury like
say,
that.
That's what excited me. Mm-hmm. I was inspired by that. It's nice to know that generations back, you know, that strength and that courage and that resilience really has parlayed through all of our generations.
And the thing to keep in mind, too, these were professional athletes. It says it in articles. It says it in the cover of your book.
Yes, professional.
Which means they were getting they weren't getting a lot of money because, as you said, the
right.
The guy that was running this, the white guy that was running, you know, that brought them out there, he got the bulk of the money. But they were getting something. They were getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
And in that era, you know, when black men athletes, especially in baseball, weren't, some of them were just playing for the love of. They weren't getting anything initially.
Exactly.
And this team was, and that's so important. I'm just glad. I just really am honored that you've written this book. I mean, it's really,
you.
You know, it's a godsend. And again, I got to thank my friend James for suggesting that you come on here. Now, what do you hope, you know, I know some people like look at the book and they'll turn the page and they'll see automatically that the featured character is a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
But what is your audience? Because it's beyond, you know, because I have a daughter who's an adult now, but I could just, you know, as I was reading, I said, if she was a girl, a little girl again, she would catch immediately that this isn't just a little girly little book, but there's more to it. What was your audience? What are you trying to reach?
Much more.
With this?
So honestly, as I said, this book is the first book that is a part of a series that I'm designing to be used as curricula. And what I do, as you see with the Philadelphia Dolly Vartans, I write about little-known individuals who have made notable contributions to American history. Now, why do I do that? I do that because African-American history is a large part of American history. So that's the first thing that the books do, is they're going to fill those gaps. And again, the books primarily, when we talk about the curricular, are targeted to our elementary students. And why do we want to do that? It's really important because books that reflect African-American children are more meaningful to them because they make connections to those. And if a book is more meaningful, then, of course, I might be inspired to read more, which will give me more reading skills. Now, why
right.
is that important? That is important because reading is integrated into all of the other major content areas like math and science. And, of course, you see the history that's in this book. It was also important to me, though, to not just use it for curriculum to nurture the cognitive development. The book also nurtures the social and the emotional development of children. It gives them a sense of self-love and self-worth and self-confidence and of emotional wellness. And so I can't stress enough that all of those things, of course, will aid the academic progress of our young children. And it is particularly important when I thought about my audience that with that, it is so important for our children to have books like this, because
right
now there are four groups of children who are at risk of the school-to-prison pipeline. And that would be, of course, African-American children, particularly African-American males, children with special needs, children in foster care, and children who live below the poverty level. So again, in the book, what I do is use that theme, ingenuity and resilience, because what the book is doing is telling them that when you are faced with or experience something unfair, you don't fight fire with fire. You fight fire with positive action steps that are going to get you to a place where you can achieve your goals. And so with that, with the book, too, I wanted to make sure that it was a high-quality book, meaning that it was well-written with a lot of information in it. And it's really neat because in the book, there are actually two big secrets. The one secret they find out at the end of the book because they discover who the mysterious woman is who's been talking to the main character.
Don't say anymore.
Who's talking to the little girl, the character, Shatasia. And then also, as we were just talking about, when we talk about how the Philadelphia Dolly Vardens were skilled athletes, they're going to discover how they put the franchise owner in a trick bag and were actually able to exert their skills.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't give it all away, but I wanted people to understand that part. And then also I'll say this too. Now, it is important to say that with this series and in this book, I have what's called an after story. And the after story is designed for rereads of the book. Because when you read the after story and do the rereads, there are questions. So that allows for new discoveries because of the little clues that they may not have picked up on for the first time. And
right.
The other takeaway I would say is, yes, it is absolutely important for children who are African-American to be exposed to books with African Americans as the main characters, but here's the other part. This is a big takeaway. It is equally important for children from the mainstream to be exposed to books that have African Americans as the main character, because when they don't, then what happens is that's how they start to develop that sense of being superior.
So it's very early.
It starts very early, and people don't understand that, but it starts very early, and honestly, it starts early, and let's face it, it is cultivated throughout school, and honestly, one of those connections, that is why you are seeing so many times that the domestic violence that is actually directed towards people of color comes from our white males. Because what have they been telling? Oh, they're taking away your power. So now, remember when the guy went down to Texas or whatever, they're taking everything away from us, and that's why you're
right.
Seeing some of that, because of that false sense of superiority that they actually experienced all through school. They were basically told by what? By the books that all of the children were exposed to, by the white faculty and teachers and administrators that were the majority in everything. So people may say, well, we value diversity in all of our students, but your practices don't show that. And so
that is
why it's really important for all students to really, really, really be able to have exposure to and understand the history that the Philadelphia Dolly Vardens and other little-known individuals made to American history.
That's great. And I want to ask you this, because I used to teach back in the 90s and early 2000s conflict management in the elementary schools and in the youth prisons in Denver,
mm-hmm.
Colorado. You know, there's something that I know you, when I say this, you'll probably understand immediately. But in some of the schools I would teach in, just, you know, volunteering to do conflict management, you could either go in there and you would see the seating arrangement.
Yes.
Because many of these schools had mostly white kids and the black
mm-hmm.
kids or Latino kids, but mainly the black kids that were in there, they were seated either closer to this teacher or way in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I would always look at this and say, well, you know, this is fascinating. You know, they're running a serious mind game on a little 8-year-old kid, 10-year-old kid.
Yes.
And I wonder if you've seen that. You've picked that up.
Yes, and again, that's why when I was just talking about the school to the prison pipeline, that's exactly what that has to do with.
That's what it is.
And of course, we do know factually that even in early childhood education, so when it comes to even kindergarten teachers, who the most, of course, are white female, and this is not a bashing session. These are just facts that they, of course, have biases against African American males. And the fact that a lot of times it's because they're not aware of the dimensions of being African American, and they're not aware of the behaviors or some of the things that are our tradition. So I'll just give you a brief little example. So for example, I recognize and respect everybody's beliefs, but so there are a lot of African American families who attend faith-based institutes. And in some of those faith-based institutes, you know, we have what's called call and response. The speaker, right. The minister, whomever, he'll talk and then he'll want you to respond back. So a lot of our children go on to the schools, and we're talking kindergarten. Now, I understand when you're in third and fifth and those grades, you have to learn how to differentiate. But when you've got a kindergartner who he's been reinforced for talking out, or in our community, we encourage people to help each other out. But then he goes to his kindergarten class where now only raise your hand to answer, or, you know, the teacher asks one child to do something and he goes over and helps. He's reprimanded for it. He's punished for the things in the school system that he's rewarded for in his community. And so, again, that is an issue, and that is when they start to be at threat of getting those labels. Oh, look how aggressive he is. He never listens. He's talking out. And that's what I mean about now they're at a greater risk for involvement in the juvenile justice system. And also, we've had 5,000 children who have had experiences in the criminal justice system. And so,
that's really why I'm
starting with the elementary children to really try to get people to understand that. So you have those implicit biases. You have the overt biases. You have teachers who will, as soon as they get their students, basically track them. Oh, you're tracked to do well, but you're tracked to fail, so I'm not even going to spend a lot of time on you. And anything you do, I'm going to nail you for it.
Or
it is sad, but it is still true in the 21st century.
Right. And I don't know, since I haven't been in the schools in this century, I'm no longer doing the conflict management stuff, but I remember when they used to track kids another way by giving the black kids and Latino kids who they thought were trouble drugs.
Sure.
In the schools. Ritalin, you name it.
A lot of kids, and let's say, you know, as a disclaimer, there are some children who do need some of the medicinal support.
Some do.
That is
some
true.
Do.
But in general, yes, there was and still can be the overuse of medication.
And that's scary. And many times, as I learned in Colorado, back during the time I was doing that work, a lot of the parents didn't know until it was too late that their child was getting some medication each morning.
Well, and not even that, you have to think about, too, and this is why it's important that I would encourage all parents and primary caregivers of children to, if they're not comfortable or don't have a lot of knowledge as far as how those things work, to pull somebody into their social support network who does know that, because parents and children have rights. But if you don't know that, and let's say I'm the principal and that teacher and I want something to happen, could you imagine how unsettling or even intimidating it might be for the parent to go and they talk fast and tell you these things? And I say that because I have a master's in special ed. And so in my family and with friends, whenever there are those issues, they'll call me and I'll say, no. First thing you got to do is ask him, now, what did you do to intervene? Show me your data. And then I also tell him, I say, you do know that you have a right not to give your consent if you feel like that is not the best thing for your child.
That's it. And we, you know, I'm going to have to get you back on to talk separately about the educational system, because we could go
I love
all
it.
Day with that. Mm-hmm. That's a whole separate thing. But your book, I mean, the book you've written is kind of connects to all that. And I'm just happy and just proud that you're doing this series of books because it's needed.
Thank you.
And, it's, and again, I'm just happy that, you know, there's an African-American woman that's written this book and that's doing this, that can write. Because as I'm reading this book, I'm saying to myself, I can tell this is a sister. You know, I already knew that. So I can tell by the writing what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And again,
and
that's
know,
important, too, that we have to have some of our writers who have those authentic experiences. That's
definitely
really important also.
And to understand, you know, I've had, you know, and again, as I was saying earlier, I'm not like downing the folks out there, you know, the white historians and scholars I've had on the program over 21 years to talk about in particular the Negro Leagues, but it's something one of us can do that because we see things that they don't.
Sure.
You know, and for instance, there are a lot of folks who think that the Negro Leagues were like, that we wanted to do that. Yeah, we wanted to play baseball, but there's a reason why they were Negro Leagues, and it had to do with segregation and racism.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's what I always don't hear, and I've had some folks over the years get mad at me when I say that. Because they don't see
well, again, that. Again, even though we are 21 years into the 21st century, people are still very uncomfortable talking about race.
Oh, yeah.
And bigotry, you know, particularly institutional racism and bigotry.
No, they don't want to deal with that. Still don't want to deal with it. And right now I'm in a state where they just rescinded. You may know this in Iowa. They just rescinded teaching diversity in the schools here. They decided they're not going to put a book like yours would not be in the school.
Well, see, that actually would be something that in our discussion, because, you know, you talked about the takeaways for children. That is what I would say should be one of the takeaways for adults.
Right.
The first thing I would do is encourage all adults, you know, who are involved in this to make concentrated efforts to advocate for children's books that feature African Americans as the main characters. And I would encourage them to make concentrated efforts to immerse children in said books. But it's also important, too, that we want our parents and other family members or friends to make books like these gifts to children during different holidays or birthdays. But it's also equally important to advocate for books that have African Americans as the main characters. You really want to advocate for those kinds of books to be in school libraries. And not just the school libraries, because we're talking about elementary, you also want to advocate for the books to be a part of the classroom library.
That's right.
And, of course, it's also equally important to advocate for them in your community libraries. And I will say, I'm in Springfield, Missouri, and our community library system has been very enthused. They reached out to me, and we are actually going to do some activities over the summer where I launch my series, and they actually do have several copies of the book in every one of their branches. But it is
great.
Up to adults. Use your voices. You do have a right when you go to the schools to see, really just kind of chat and see how many books there are about people of color. And typically what you'll see is a handful. And no, you absolutely want more than a handful. And even as I said, in classrooms in elementary schools, they have a classroom library, so you absolutely want those books because when children are done and they have free time, that's when they can go over and read those books. And again, what I said earlier, I want the African-American children to see positive reflections of themselves, and I also want children from the mainstream to read about these wonderful accomplishments of African-American characters.
Right. And the other thing that you're forgetting, too, to have an African-American author write the books like you have done.
Sure, yes. Authentic, yeah, books written by and about are really important. And again, let me say, a lot of people, when you start talking that way, they want to hear that you're saying either or. It's not an either or situation.
No.
For me, because number one, you want the book to be a great book. So it is absolutely fine for there to be books written by others who are not a part of the character, but it is crucial to make sure that you do have books that are written by and about the people, because that's what we call authentic literature, for what you just said, because I've got insight into it because of my own authentic experiences. So I tell people, don't get distracted by that either or fighter, oh, we're saying replace, no. And the most important thing too, though, is you want to make sure that it isn't just a handful. You really want to push to say, let's have a well-balanced classroom library. Let's have a well-balanced school library that is reflective of all of the different ethnic groups of color, as well as the mainstream. We also want to make sure that we have books that feature individuals with disabilities. We also want to make sure that there are books that are featured in different geographic regions. So again, we're trying to create an anti-bias library where there's no bias for anybody, so that everybody will see reflections of themselves as well as get views into the lives of others.
That's the key thing. That's the important thing. And like you're saying, having more books, because we don't want to have a library that has just your book in it, and the librarian is pulled to the side and say, well, where are your Black history books? So, well, we got Dr. Brinson. Well, where are the other ones? Well, that's enough. We got one.
Right, exactly.
You don't want that. You don't want that. But I'm just, I'm just happy to have you on here today. I really appreciate, again, that you've written this book. And if anyone
Thank
wants
you.
To reach you, you have a tell them your website, because I did go on that to look at
the
bio.
Okay, the website is www.drbrinsonbrand.com.
And again, I just want to thank you for coming on. I want to ask you what your next book is, but I know that you want to keep that kind of a secret for now.
Yes, it is a secret.
All right. Anything about the Negro Leagues or anything, or are you going to do something completely different?
Something completely different.
Wow. If I had put this out there, because no one has written a book. They've written about Mimi Johnson. I met her many years ago. They've written about Toni Stone. No one has written, from what I've seen, on Connie Morgan at all.
I have no comment at this time.
I'm just putting it out there. That's all I'm saying. But again, thank you so much, Dr. Brinson. I hope to have you back on again. I wish you so much success with this book. Oh, by the way, and I want to ask you too, what has been the comments you've been getting about the book?
Basically surprised, amazed, and gratitude for sharing the story. Most people, of course, did not know, they had never heard of the Philadelphia Dolly Vartons, and really did not know that they were the first women's professional baseball team. So that, has been the biggest comment. Oh, my gosh, I didn't even know anything about this. And so, again, that is what my series is going to do. It's going to highlight little-known individuals who've done amazing things.
And what are the historians saying to you, the baseball historians? Have they come to you or?
I was on a show with the International Women's Professional Conference, and they actually have really welcomed me with open arms. Yes, I got a call from one of the members who said, would you be willing to come on? And so, I did a blog with them, and they were really excited and pleased about it. And then we also did kind of a national call-in question type of a session. So I will say that is something that is changing. You really do have people who understand how important it is to have these authentic stories told by people who have the experiences. They really are welcoming those opportunities. Now, of course, you have some who are going to kick and resist and whine about it.
Oh, yeah.
But for the most part, people are like, wow, thank you, because not only did you write about the history of that, the way you put it, I was really kind of able to get some insight into what the women themselves were experiencing and the challenges that they faced.
And you did, you did a great, great job of it. I really appreciate you being on today.
thank you so much. I'm going to ask you to come back on again to talk about some other things as far as history and education, and also hopefully when the next book comes out, I can have you back on. So thank you
Absolutely.
So much, Dr. Brinson. You take care.
Thank you for
Be
having
safe.
Me.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And again, that was Dr. Sabrina A. Brinson, author of the new book on Treehouse Press. This is Meet the Philadelphia Dolly Varden. And I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Again, I got to apologize. I had a little problem with the wires out here. I don't know what's going on, but you got the gist of the program. That's the main thing. That's what I always want. And I know some of you out there who've told me on Facebook and other places you've listened in, you wanted to call in. You had the opportunity to call, so don't call me now and ask me questions when you should have asked Dr. Brinson. But she gave her website and all, so you can get a hold of her there. But get the book. Get the book. Meet the Philadelphia Dolly Varden. And I think I'll play some music right now before I get off here. I think I'm going to do Our Native Daughters. And I'm going to do Better Get You Some Learning here on the Root and Root Show. Thank you.
Out. A lioness is on the rise. standing tall up to face the darkest and the hardest of times. We'll be taking care of all the children there are, but if it's required, we'll be on the front line. You can call me by my name. I am ready to roll. Once the rules remain the same, how the story's been told. When you are willing to serve, we have room to observe, to see if you can walk the walk you tell. Let me give you my word, my voice must be heard. Bravery is a beast of my heart. Call me by my name, I am ready to roll. Once the rules remain the same, how the story is. A lioness is on the rise. Don't ever let no doubt. When the roll is called up, we'll be standing tall up to face the darkest and the hardest of times.
Now, I just did an old radio thing that I used to hate, but I almost did it. I almost talked through a song, but that was... Yeah, I used to hate that. Man, I used to be taping songs on the radio way back when, and DJ'd come on, start talking through the song, singing through it sometime. But that was went down to Jamaica with Queen Africa, so with an I, and that was Lioness on the Rise. And before that, we went to Britain with the great saxophonist Nubia Garcia and Stand With Each Other. And we started to set off on the Root and Root Show with Our Native Daughters and Better Get Your... Get Your Learning. And Our Native Daughters, yes, some of you know, that was Rahana Gideons, the great banjo player, along with Amethyst Keel, Leah McCullough, and Allison Russell. And they are amazing. That came out in 2019 on the Smithsonian Folkways label. And they're just amazing. You know, four banjo playing young African-American women, they can play. They play a little bit of everything, but it's all roots music. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed all the music I played today on the Root and Roots Show, as well as my guests. I really enjoyed. I could have gone all day talking to my guests. Dr. Sabrina A. Brinson, author of the book Meet the Philadelphia Dolly Varden, and it's inspired by the first African-American women's professional baseball team. And I just hope, you know, I always hope on the show that once you hear about a subject, that you go out there, you know, buy the book, but also do your own research just to learn even more, because this is an excellent little book for anyone, not just for children, as I said, for anyone, because you'll get some knowledge out of it. 26 pages of great, great pictures in there, illustrations. The illustrator, we didn't even mention the illustrator's name, but he's Mark Montgomery. So check out this book, Meet the Philadelphia Dolly Vardens. But again, we'll get out of here right now. And again, as I always say, you know, we're all going through this pandemic right now. No matter what you may feel about this, no matter your opinion about wearing a mask, not wearing a mask, getting vaccinated or not vaccinated, you're affected. You're affected no matter what. And so do what you can to help someone in need, especially a senior in your community who may need someone to do everything from mow their lawn. Depends on where you are in this world.
shovel snow, pick up trash, do laundry for them, go get food, or just knock on their door at their house, at their apartment, condo, wherever they are, just see how they're doing. Keep their social distancing. But ask how they're doing just to see what's going on, because they'll really appreciate that, and you'll appreciate that by helping them. Also, I always ask if you, because a lot of children are still not in school, but if you can help a child in your community, you know, that doesn't have a computer, a tablet, or a laptop, and you can donate or buy one for that child, and if you could pay partly of all of their Wi-Fi to get them going so they can continue their education, that would be great. That would be greatly appreciated. So you can do, because we all got to do all our part. We got to bring some positiveness into wherever you are in this world. So please do that. That would be really greatly appreciated, and you'll just feel so good. You'll just feel so good. But again, this is Greg Rashid with the Root and Root Show, and if you got any requests for future folks to appear on the show, because I take requests, you know, like I said, I got Dr. Brinson on because a friend of mine just asked me, you know, could I get her on? I said, sure. When I learn more, I said, yeah, sure thing. So if you have anyone, let me know. You can go to my Facebook site, Greg, G-R-E-G, last name Rashid, R-A-S-H-E-E-D. And hope to see you on there. As I've seen that many folks just asking me things. I really appreciate that. But again, this is Greg Rashid. Go in love and go in peace. We'll see you next time on the Root and Root Show.
Thanks for tuning in. See you next time. And remember, spread the knowledge, share the power.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.